This is Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Whether it's banning plastic bags or plastic straws, there is an effort these days to cut down on plastic pollution. But it's what we can't see that may be the bigger issue: microplastics. Advocates call them the invisible problem. They're in surprising places, and they come from surprising sources. The nonprofit Adventure Scientists relies on lovers of the outdoors to collect data from remote, hard-to-reach places, and Katie Christensen spearheads its microplastics initiative. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Ryan. How are you today?
Doing well. You know, the West is known for rivers and lakes that draw people from all over, and you have found microplastics in them. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, we were maybe not that surprised to discover that microplastics were ubiquitous, not just in marine systems where they were originally known to exist, but even in the backcountry and in wilderness areas in Montana, in Colorado, throughout the West, really throughout the whole world.
Well, I have a ton of questions about what microplastics are, but first off, what got you looking into this type of pollution inland? You know, because I have so often associated this with oceans.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we were really curious about where microplastics were entering the system. When we first started studying microplastics, it was through this global initiative back in 2013. And at that time, very little was known about microplastics, both the, you know, consequences of these polluting the environment, where they were coming from, the extent to which they're contaminating our ecosystems. So we were studying this issue as a marine issue, which is where most of the science had been at that point as well. But we at Adventure Scientists were based in Bozeman, Montana, and the headwaters of the Gallatin Watershed, which is our home watershed, it's our drinking water, takes its place in Yellowstone National Park. It flows through Forest Service lands, through wilderness areas, ultimately through Bozeman, Montana. And we were wondering, how is this river potentially contributing to what we had come to think of as a marine problem? And since we're really well equipped at working with volunteers in the outdoor adventure community, and since Bozeman is full of those kinds of folks, we harnessed this group of people and deployed them into the backcountry in the Gallatin watershed, and asked our volunteers to collect 1 liter water samples that we then analyzed for microplastic pollution. Not surprisingly, you know, rivers flow to the ocean. Gallatin watershed is the headwaters of what ultimately becomes the Mississippi River. Uh-huh. So what we found in the Gallatin watershed, we know then, is making its way downstream ultimately and contributing to our counts in our marine systems.
Yeah. What did you find in the Gallatin?
Yeah, so we ended up, over the 2 years of our study, we worked with 120 volunteers to collect 774 water samples. 57% of those samples that we collected were contaminated with microplastics. And just to put this in perspective, throughout our global study, we had 73% of our samples containing microplastics. That was much higher in our marine side of that data set. In our marine samples, we had 89% were contaminated with microplastics. So comparing that again back to our Gallatin study, this is a headwaters, freshwater ecosystem that runs through wilderness area, and yet still 57% of our samples contained microplastics.
Okay, contained microplastics. We have to answer the question of what the heck microplastics are, of course.
Yeah, sure. So we think of plastic pollution oftentimes as maybe a plastic bag or a straw or a plastic fork, you know, making its way down some river system or sitting in the environment, or something that didn't make its way to the trash can or recycling bin. So with microplastics, it's the same general concept, except these are oftentimes invisible to the unaided eye. They're plastic particles that are less than 5 millimeters in size, and they oftentimes originate from some larger plastic object. So think of your polar fleece. This is like the classic example.
Okay.
It's this, you know, large, obviously visible object that is at least partially, if not fully, synthetic in its composition. But that plastic fleece over time degrades, whether it's because you're wearing it out backpacking and you rub against a tree and some little pieces of what was this larger fleece come off, or you launder it and in the washing machine cycle, plastics are shed from that object. And you end up with something that's less than 5 millimeters in size. Oftentimes, in the case of microfibers, it's even much smaller, like less than 1.5 millimeters in size. So definitely invisible to the unaided eye. And these are harder to capture. They're harder to put into a recycling bin because we don't exactly know that they exist, where they are, how to do that.
Okay, so you gave two examples there with the polar fleece. One is I'm out wearing it and I rub up against a tree and maybe a little of the microfiber goes into the environment. I think the second example was that you wash the polar fleece and it gets into the environment that way. So this stuff isn't being filtered out by, you know, plants, water plants.
Yeah, unfortunately, the current technology in most wastewater treatment facilities is just not adequate to capture all of the microplastics that make their way in there. So even if they're capturing, let's say, 50%, which would be a pretty great number, in your typical laundering cycle, one piece of clothing that's synthetic can discharge hundreds of thousands of pieces of microplastics. So 50% is just not going to cut it.
Gosh. I guess I feel like I just can't win. Like if I care for the environment and I want to go out in it and explore it, I put on my polar fleece because it's cold, and now I'm contributing to plastic pollution.
Right.
I mean, put yourself in the mind of the listener who's just going, living pollutes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's me. I totally think about this when I go to bed at night. I'm not somehow, distanced from the fact that I am contributing to this problem every time I do a load of laundry. But there are some steps that consumers can take to do something about it. And granted, this is a much, much bigger issue than really only is possible for one person to tackle. But things just as being, you know, simple as being conscious of what you're consuming and buying products that are built to last. Studies show that those products that are built to last, that are built more robustly, they don't shed as many microplastics in the washing cycle. Washing your clothes less often is actually a really significant way to reduce yours as an individual's contribution to microplastics pollution. But I hear what you're saying, and I struggle with that. I think there's an opportunity with microplastics, unlike some other issues that are affecting us as a global community, because microplastics is not yet a polarizing environmental issue. There's just, you know, mountains of evidence showing the ubiquity of this problem. And I think it's something that is, it presents a lot of opportunities for people all over the world to get behind.
And potentially manufacturers of these products, I gather. I mean, I think of microbeads, which got so much attention a few years ago, that are in cosmetic products, for instance.
Right.
There's been a real dent made in the microbeads, right?
Right. So microbeads are considered primary microplastics. And those are those kinds of microplastics that were produced in the first place to be of the micro size.
Yeah.
So microbeads, right? When we talk about microfibers, which for what it's worth, over 80% of the microplastics that we found in our Gallatin study were microfibers. So they were fibrous in origin as opposed to microbeads, for example.
Okay.
Those are considered secondary microplastics. So those are originating from some larger object, like, again, that polar fleece. And in that case, it really is so important that manufacturers of these products are taking seriously this issue. And I have seen that, especially in the outdoor industry, particularly Patagonia, who was one of our funders. These are organizations who are putting their money where their mouth is. They're doing research, they're developing products, and they're really contending with contributing to this problem and how they can lessen that impact.
Now, Katie Christensen from the nonprofit Adventure Scientists, I think we have to explore what the effect of microplastics are on the environment, so that we're not sounding unnecessarily a panic alarm if one's not necessary. Do we know what they do to, I don't know, fish or environmental health or something?
Yeah, so that's a really important thing to put out there, because what I will say to preface all of this is the research is still in its infancy. Microplastics is a new you know, new field of environmental study because plastics is a relatively new product, and these microplastics in particular. So the way that they affect the environment, the way that they affect human health is all still, there's a lot of conjecture, and yet there are some studies that show that microplastics can affect the feeding behavior of fish, can actually cause constrictions in the GI tract of organisms that intake them, so like plankton or small fish. They can cause lacerations in the inside of the GI tract. And when you think about microplastics, we need to not just consider them as these physical objects, but that they actually are possible transports of chemical toxins in the environment. So a lot of these products, when they're produced, they're infused with dyes, with flame retardants, with other chemicals. And then as they move through the ecosystem, because of their properties, they can also attach themselves to persistent organic pollutants. So, you know, DDT being one example. But when an organism then ingests a microplastic, it's not just causing this potential blockage in its esophagus, for example, but it's also now ingesting these chemical toxins. And then those can bioaccumulate through a food chain. And humans that consume seafood or fish, but also microplastics are in our drinking water. So you don't have to be an omnivore to still be ingesting microplastics.
Well, I'll look forward to more science as it emerges. Katie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Katie Christensen is project manager for the Microplastics Initiative through the nonprofit Adventure Scientists. And her goal is to find out how landlocked states contribute to microplastic pollution. This is Colorado Matters from CPR News.